Hello, everyone, and welcome to back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. I'm an Associate General Counsel here at Compliance Alliance. Joining us today, we have Rand Painter, President and CEO of Michigan Bankers Association. Mr. Painter joined the MBA in 2015 and held leadership positions with state banking associations for nearly 26 years. He is an outstanding leader and has brought forth a wealth of banking association leadership to the MBA. Rand was the executive vice president for the Virginia Bankers Association and held similar leadership roles with the North Carolina Bankers Association. He has had deep experience in banking industry issues, including active roles with governmental relations, a wide range of complex membership products and services, and a passion for personal membership outreach and communication. He serves on the board of directors of Ozone House and the board of trustees for Pfeiffer University. He served as co-chair of the American Bankers Association Grassroots Committee and chairman of the Graduate School of Banking at Madison, Wisconsin. Mr. Painter, welcome to the Banking Matters podcast.
Thank you, Dan. And it's just Rand. Thank you for that very nice introduction. It's a pleasure to be with you today, sir.
Well, thank you, Rand. We're excited to have you. I always like to start these podcasts out kind of just by asking a little bit about you. Like, how did you get into the banking industry? How did you get to where you are today? Give me a little bit of a background about what got you into banking in the first place.
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I'm sitting here with you today because I went to a basketball game in Kansas City, Missouri in 1989. So I lived on the basketball hall at Pfeiffer, which I'm sure was a mistake in housing. And the guys went to the NAIA championships in Kansas City, Missouri, Kemper Arena, which is no more. And one of the alums there was the exec of then the Savings and Loan Association, who became a mentor to me. And that was my entree. So I've never been a banker, but always a trade association exec.
Well, that must have been a pretty important basketball game for you.
It was, and you know, we were supposed to win in that first round. We won the first two rounds, but I didn't get to stay till the third round because I was out of money, and so were the three people we had driven to Kansas City with for 19 hours. So we had to go back to Meisenheimer to Pfeiffer. So we were on a high when we went back because we had left a winning game.
That's fantastic. And so this is while you were going to college at Pfeiffer,
right? Right.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, just like many of us, sounds like you kind of fell into the banking industry. That seems to be the more common thing these days.
Right. Right.
Well, awesome. Let's jump right in then. For our first topic today, we have kind of banking inequality. This has been an area that's been on a lot of people's minds, a lot of regulators' discussions. It's been at the forefront of regulatory concerns for many years. Banks can play an active role in, to quote the OCC, closing the wealth gap. With the ongoing CRA changes and focus on servicing the needs of minority and low to moderate income communities, how do you see banks really setting themselves up for success in the future? What programs and processes do you think that a bank should really have in place for this?
Well, that's a great question. And certainly in our country's history, we know that there have been times when the recognition of communities that might be different from others has not been as positive as it could have been. There's been certainly a greater awareness and greater emphasis with both banks and, as you mentioned, the regulators in serving all communities. I mean, the more communities you serve, the more opportunities you have to build successful individuals, successful businesses, successful communities. And the more successful our community is, the more successful our company, our bank is. You know, in Michigan, we're seeing more and more banks participate in the Bank On program to offer lower cost accounts to folks who perhaps have not had a banking relationship. I think there's a greater awareness that there's simply some communities that, because of either historical perspectives or lack of interaction, there's opportunities to build trust in different communities. And the more we reach into communities and learn what their needs are and spend time, I think the more opportunities we have. You know, we look at how PPP was administered, for instance, and we were involved with our local Congress, the congressperson representing this district, and some different groups. And there was a real perception that that perhaps some of it was discriminatory. And what came out of those conversations was relationships. You know, that's so much of what we do as a trade association, what you do as Compliance Alliance, and really what we do as bankers is building relationships with people who we're trying to help them realize their dreams of homeownership or savings or business expansion. And when you simply have an account and you don't have a relationship with Daniel the banker or Rand or Marianne or whomever, just having that relationship so that you have someone to pick up the phone and call when there's an opportunity or conversely a challenge can be a real help to individuals and thus groups of people, thus communities.
So are you saying that you would like to see banks maybe develop more policies and procedures around like relationship banking and just that kind of field? Or what would you like to see banks actually do? Like if
I don't know that I would say policies and procedures, but I think just more awareness and focus of what does our community look like? Who are we serving? Where are there opportunities for us to serve others? You know, here in Michigan, we partnered with the CU League and the Commissioner's Office, encouraging establishment of accounts. You know, there's so many people who are outside of banking. Just encouraging people to establish an account and to become banked. So many opportunities once you cross that line, so to speak.
Perfect. And you did mention something that it's actually a term that I haven't heard yet. The banking on, would you mind expanding what that is really quick for me?
Sure. Bank On is an account certification program, and there are different standards there of basic accounts that have, it's a lower cost or no cost account. It's in collaboration in different cities across the country. I know here we have them in Detroit and I think Grand Rapids and perhaps one or two others where there's just a focus with community leaders and with organizations to focus on folks who are not in the banking space to establish an account and to become more banked. You know, when we had Daniel, the an announcement with the governor's office and the commissioner's office on this, there was a financial counselor, a community counselor, who talked about the different fees that are associated if you don't have a banking account. Fees with where you get your check from, where you get it deposited, if you're using some kind of check casher, and all these different fees that were just astounding. And, you know, I grew up with not a lot of means in Eastern North Carolina, but we always had a bank. My parents always had a banking relationship. And so some of that is so foreign to me, not knowing that you can walk in a bank and go to the teller as I did as a kid. And of course, the way we do that now is certainly different. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, just establishing that relationship for those who don't have it, and educating them on what they can save in fees by having a relationship with a bank rather than some storefront in a strip mall that is not looking after your best interest.
Right. Well, that actually leads us perfectly into our next question, which is more about the digitalization of the banking industry. Pre-COVID, we started to see a substantial push towards digitalization. I remember while I was working in the branch, we used to push members to use the digital conveniences that we offered. With COVID, we have seen a further push to develop consumer-facing technologies. What new technologies have you been seeing, if any, and how can or should a bank stay ahead of the technology curve, and what risks would you be concerned about in this process?
Well, I'll start with risk. You know, cyber is certainly a concern on many planes in this country and around the world today, and ensuring that you're partnering with vendors who have this top of mind and that you're aware of their procedures and that you have a plan in place if you have a breach on how to communicate with your team and customers in a very timely manner so that awareness and safety is maintained, I think is paramount. You're right with I never like to use the C word when we talked about the pandemic, Daniel, because our banks were never, in fact, C-L-O-S-E-D, right? They were always open, just open and serving in a very different way than they had been literally days before. And, you know, I think it's appropriate to say thank you to the bankers across the country who stepped up in ways that really were, in fact, heroic in keeping the economy moving and making sure that people had access to banking services. There was a lot of education. Some people in even quasi-urban communities in our state, bankers told me about people who had never been to the drive-thru because they'd always come in. And, you know, that seems very foreign to those of us, you know. My primary bank account is in my home state. I go in banks all the time. I don't often go to the bank because the bank is in my pocket. And how convenient. And the more convenient it is, the more light and ease of use as technology continues to evolve, banks will continue to evolve to share those advances with customers, ensuring that their needs are met.
So how have you seen, I know we talked a little bit about like how banks are evolving and the importance of having like security set up for your programs. How have you seen community banks? Because a lot of times evolving with the times requires capital, requires the ability to pay for these kinds of things. How have you seen community banks really try to adapt to the times while not necessarily breaking the bottom line?
Well, I think that that's a great question. And yet some of that comes from it bleeding edge, cutting edge, and coming along somewhat with the flow. Oftentimes, a smaller bank might not be bleeding edge, but recognizes the importance of an advance in the industry and partners with determining what's best for their community and their customers to either to develop or join with a partner or what have you to ensure that their customers' needs are met. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So really what you're saying is it's they're not necessarily going to be the top or the front of the bell curve, but they need to determine where the appropriate position is along that bell curve of the technology advancements.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, it's certainly personal to each organization as to their comfort level and exactly.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That actually kind of transitions us right into our final question here. And this is one that's a very interesting topic of the times, because there's a lot going on with it. Crypto technology is obviously at the forefront of the technology curve or the industry curve. From your seat, you may or may not have a ton of exposure to this, but what are we looking at here? What should our concerns be? What should a community bank be doing about this? What about crypto?
Well, what about crypto indeed? Thank you for acknowledging that I may or may not have knowledge there. My knowledge is not what it should be. Like many, I need to invest time in researching the basics and understanding. And I think a general awareness is very important. Ensuring that that our customers recognize the safety and soundness of our organizations, of our banks, of the value of FDIC insurance. So important. So important. And, you know, this is kind of a what if, Daniel, but you know, if you're doing all of your banking electronically, I'm not sure what the awareness is of FDIC coverage and the safety and the backing of the government there. You know, when you think about when you were growing up and you walked into the bank branch and there was that gold decal on the door insured by the FDIC, you know, I don't remember who told me, if it was someone in the bank or my parents, that that meant that your money's safe. And, you know, there's risk with crypto. And understanding that risk and is very important. More and more people of all walks of life are involved in crypto. We had a conference last spring, and two of the servers on the hotel catering staff said on the food and beverage team, asked about our conference and mentioned what bank they were with. And they also said, well, we're involved in crypto too. And it was just fascinating to chat with them about how they felt about that. So,
yeah, it's definitely becoming more mainstream than it was. So actually, I do have one further question for you. Sure. That I'd be interested in your take on, just in your position as the Michigan Bankers Association president. Expanding diversity, yes, within the workforce, both within banks and with every industry, just in order to get that opposing viewpoints, differing viewpoints, conversations, how should a community bank, or what can they do to really diversify their staffing? Like, do you have any best practice recommendations? Because, I mean, so much of today's just comes down to who submits an application.
Sure.
What if
sure.
They're not generating those diverse applications? How can they really diversify their staffing?
Well, I think it comes, you know, when we started looking at DEI here at the MBA, I talked with the leader of the only Black-owned bank in the state of Michigan and said, I really need some help here. How do we do this? How do I start? And he said, Rand, you know, you can make a checklist and check boxes, or you can dive deep. And diving deep takes time. It's not going to be fast, and it's not going to be easy, and you have to choose. We chose not to check boxes. And I think you have to really look individually at where your perceptions are, where your blind spots are. That can be very uncomfortable. For a bank, there is a tool, I think, with the FDIC on DEI. You might want to just print that out and take it internally as a leadership team. You know, kind of get put a pin. Where are we with our awareness and what we're doing, and begin to make plans, baby steps, whether it's in hiring or groups that we interact with or what have you, and then come back and look at it periodically, whether that's 60 days or quarterly or what have you, to see where your advancement are, just like when you're looking at any goal. But there are, one of the things that we did as a team, and I'm trying to, I think it's called the privilege walk. Have you done the privilege walk, Daniel?
Can't say I have.
If you Google privilege walk, and you can read it and just think about the responses. But if you're with a small group or with a team and you line up and take a step forward, if you had no college indebtedness, take a step if you're if you come from a home that does not have two parents in the home your entire childhood, mm-hmm. take two steps back. If you had to skip a meal, take two steps back. The questions have nothing to do with race necessarily, but in our perception, sometimes some of those questions do. It's just, it's fascinating. We did it as a team, and you just learn so much about where you are and where others have been. Kind of to take a walk in their shoes, so to speak. But again, it's, you can't really flip the switch and say we're all perfect in our DEI efforts at whatever organization or on an individual basis today. But if you're making positive steps in the right direction, then you'll advance yourself as well as your organization. You mentioned hiring. I think one thing there is ensuring that you are working to have a diverse pool. And, you know, sometimes diversity, depending upon where you are in a state or in a country, some of the diversity is not apparent. We think about it as being ethnic and racial. That's what comes to mind immediately. But there's gender, there's socioeconomic, there's geographic, there's self-identification, et cetera, veterans. There's so many things. So embracing the diversity that you have and celebrating it and finding ways to become more diverse can be a very positive thing for your team and your organization.
Yeah, and I really appreciate the fact that you said it's a deep dive. Like it's not just something that instantaneous and happens overnight. That's absolutely what it is. It's changing a culture of an industry.
Right. Well, and it kind of goes back to that checking the box. You don't want to hire someone to check a box. You want to make sure that you are creating a pool where you have diverse thoughts and ideas, backgrounds, et cetera, for the richest pool possible. And as you continue to have those pools, some of that diversity is going to come. Right?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Ren, thank you. Thank you very much. We had the opportunity to kind of talk about the CRA changes and community changes that are happening, digitalization some, as well as some about crypto and some about diversity there. We really appreciate you joining us here on the Banking Matters podcast and sharing your knowledge with us. For the rest of you, thanks for chiming in today. And that's our Banking Matters broadcast.
Thank you, Daniel.